Happening now. We want to welcome our viewers from across the United States and around the world. This is the EdTech Situation Room. Good morning, good day, good evening. This is EdTech Situation Room, episode number 307 on October 11th, 2023. My name is Jason Neifer, and I am the Executive Director of Montana Digital Academy, which is Montana State Virtual School, located on the beautiful University of Montana campus, located right here in Missoula, Montana. And joining me tonight, as always, good evening, Dr. Westfryer. How are you tonight, kind sir?
Good evening, Jason. I am good. It is lovely to have the fall here. I guess it may be a little cooler where you are. So I'm actually batching it. We have a fifth grade field trip. My wife is on the South Carolina coast tonight for a couple nights, but it's with a lot of fifth graders, so it's going to be a mixed bag. But I am glad we're here and glad you are able to join. And I understand you've had a few traveling days and a few more ahead of you.
Yeah. I was in beautiful Denver, Colorado last week for the Virtual Learning Leadership Alliance fall meetings. And it was wonderful to connect with my really amazing state virtual school colleagues from around the nation. And I cannot begin to describe how important it is to find your people and hang out with them. This is one of the reasons why Wes and I hang out on Wednesday nights together and happen to record it so you can listen along. But it's really great to be around so many great thinkers in the virtual learning space. And also, we talked a lot about AI last week. And so had the opportunity to sit on a couple of panels, connect with some of folks that I know and respect in the space. And like I mentioned in the past, I think Michigan Virtual School is doing some really extraordinary work in helping districts kind of vision what AI looks like. And so talking with their leadership and staff was just a real extraordinary experience for me. And then I'm in Louisville next week and Billings, Montana next week. And then a week largely in the office. And then I'm kind of traveling all around the state, both for day job stuff and for AI stuff, and spending a little time with my family in Great Falls, Montana. So yeah, I'm on the road again. And, you know, things are busy, but Dr. Fryer knows how that goes, that, you know, things are busy, but when your professional cup is fulleth, for lack of a better way of putting it, it makes the longer days seem a little less long.
That is awesome. Well, we do have a couple live viewers out there. So if you're there, I want to let us know who you are. We're glad to have you join, and feel free, if you're able to, in the chat, either on Facebook or YouTube, to put in any questions, feedback, thoughts that you may have. What are we going to do tonight, Dr. Neifer? Besides admire your fine flannel.
Yes, yeah, and then yes, my beautiful fine flannel. Well, we're going to take a look at some news headlines from across the kind of techosphere and try to shoot them through the educational prism, and hope that not only is an opportunity for Wes and I to kind of work through them, and for those that listen to the show know that we do spend a lot of time kind of, you know, processing it with each other, which I think is the power of this model. But also hope to give you some insight so that you can think about this with your colleagues and students and teachers and friends as well. And our links are always available at our website, edtechsr.com/links, which you can see the Google document that we maintain. We have two of them now, going back to day one of the podcast, with literally, I'm guessing, at least 10,000 links.
Well, actually, we could parse it now with AI, right?
That's, well, yeah, we probably could.
I've thought about doing that with some other lists of past tweets, and you know, just the power of parsing. I thought, if I could create, which I could, right? Like, here are the things I've tweeted in the last week or month. You know, I could give AI a query, say, please categorize these, share these links. I've thought about actually turning the Substack that I have personally maybe into something like that, because I end up creating stuff and sharing it a lot of different places. But I mean, the power of AI. I need to also, though, let everyone know our website is having a little difficulty. And so I don't know if it was a WordPress plugin update or exactly what's going on. I may have to restore it. I verified that as of yesterday, we had a backup. The error log, I hadn't deleted it since December of 2021, and it was over 800 megs. And so that may have been slowing things down a little bit. It's just, anyway, I still love WordPress. It is just fantastic. But my favorite sites now are my Google sites that I have mapped, because Google handles all of that. But you can get to edtechsr.com/links. I went ahead, although it was too long, I guess, for Facebook live chat. So I put the shorter link, but it is working. We're a couple shows behind, but thankfully everything's always archived right away on YouTube and Facebook. But we're going to continue to faithfully maintain our website, and I will get the WordPress back up and running. So what are we going to categorically look at perhaps tonight, Jason?
Well, I think both of us have maybe tapped back on the AI articles. Not that there isn't extraordinary things going on, but it tends to suck the oxygen out of other conversations. But we'll certainly talk about AI tonight in one way, shape, or form. I see, Dr. Fryer, you have some great links on the ongoing conflicts in Europe and the Middle East right now, some web design media literacy stuff, some tech correction and big tech news, some interesting things going on in social media land. There's actually quite a few things going on in Google land, especially as it relates to education. I have a Maker News update, some Meta and Facebook news, and a kind of a sad announcement at the end that we can talk about the end of an era of a certain technology. And of course, we'll end our podcast tonight with our Geeks of the Week. Dr. Fryer, you were our link champ this week. So where would you like to start off our conversation?
Oh, well, give an invitation. If anybody's wanting to have us cover a particular topic, let us know, and we can certainly do that. Let's do a positive one, and then I definitely want to mention some Israel-Gaza war and Ukraine stuff, which is not very positive. But this is a really, really fantastic one. So I'm teaching web design this year to middle schoolers, and this is an article from WP Tavern, which is a pretty well-known WordPress site and service and news source, I guess. I think they have products that you can get as well. They have a podcast. Maybe they're just news. I think it doesn't see products, so it's news and podcast. But this is from October 6th, and it's titled "Why NASA Chose WordPress for Revamping Its Flagship Website." And I don't have the link here. I'll put it in. It's a Wonder link that I shared with my kids. But at a recent WordCamp, which happened periodically around the country, the team from NASA did a full-on hour presentation about this.
Cool.
This took 18 months. They have, let me see if I can find the numbers, 68,698 pages that they migrated from Drupal. They have over 3,000 landing pages, 3,023. They work with a company called Lone Rock Point. And I think there's so many reasons why this is fantastic. Number one, we're just looking for examples of web design best practices and having the kids, you know, try to identify those. And the quantity of information that NASA has to communicate is just, you know, incredible. It's also very engaging and exciting. But I think this is a real win for open source. And I know that with Moodle and other kinds of content management systems, Jason, that you all have been engaged with at the Academy and then just up in Montana. I mean, I think it's a great story to tell. People need to recognize, I believe, the power of open source. And, you know, WordPress powers somewhere around half, I don't know what the exact number is, but it's a ton of websites that you know are online. And yes, they do require security updates, and sometimes things happen. And you know, I don't want to be sharing the fact that we're having a little WordPress problems at the beginning of this to, you know, diminish my enthusiasm for the platform. But I thought this was just exceptionally exciting, a really great case study to share. And it's a brand new website, so go to NASA.gov and check out how amazing it is. Like I said, we were today going to the missions link at the bottom and then just using the filters, to go through. And there's so many incredible things that are happening, but it's really, really a fantastic example of web design and information sharing and open source.
This is amazing. And yeah, please do share that link with the talk, Wes, because I think that would probably, be of nerdy interest to me. And I'm a longtime WordPress user. I think I put up my first WordPress site in like 2007, maybe 2008. And it's just a really extraordinary a platform. And, you know, and I will say to your comment about, you know, don't take our comments about our website into account for that. You know, WordPress is a downloadable property where you can download it to you know, a website or web hosting and constitute a site and have a lot of control over it. But there's also plenty of opportunities to have someone else do the heavy lifting there. You can go to WordPress.com, for example, which is the pay for service that they offer, and you can get up a WordPress site that's largely maintained by the WordPress hosting company. Like, you don't have to worry about, you may have less choices, but you don't have to worry about things like plugins conflicting, et cetera, because they take care of a lot of that for you. But if you want to run your own website, and there's risk to that, especially if you're using you know, less than awesome hosting and yada, 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 it's just a really extraordinary platform for building interesting stuff. And I'm so glad you're using this in context of your web design class. It's something that, you know, very few websites in 2023 are hand coded. Almost all of them use platforms of some way, shape, or form. You mentioned Drupal, but there's WordPress, there is Joomla, there are probably thousands of smaller platforms, content management system platforms that do the same thing. And I hadn't heard that NASA was doing on their website. I know that Lon Sybin, who is a content creator on YouTube, that I actually give money to him on Patreon. He does a lot of hardware reviews, and that's, I feel like he does a good job of keeping me up to date on that. He used to use NASA.gov as a site to show off whether a hardware platform, like a laptop or a desktop, like how it performed on a complicated website. Now, looking at this website, I wonder if that's now less useful, because it seems like it is very speedy. It's sure, it's certainly, it's on my, you know, M1, Mac Mini. So, you know, it's not going to drag in a lot of circumstances there. But yeah, what a beautiful website. And, you know, as has always been, NASA just has an extraordinary communications operation.
Thomas Ho is in the chat room and asks, what are Wonderlinks? So I put this chat, this link in here. This is amazing search engine optimization right now. If you put into Google, and we've had all kinds of kids try this as well, see if it works for you, Jason. Just new tab, Google Wonderlinks with a space between it, and see if you can get my website at the top. So I have a C-named Google site, so it's mapped to lessons.westfriar.com. But evidently, there's not a lot of folks in the world creating something called Wonderlinks. Did it work for you?
Top of mind too. Yeah.
All right, yeah, that's so funny. Cool. So, like, well, yeah, being able to get my kids. No, it wasn't or not.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm impressed, because it seems like that a lot of people should be using this terminology, but apparently, it's Wonderlinks trademarked West Fryer. Because
I haven't done a whole lot of presentations, but last year for a science education group up in Canada that Alec Curls connected me with, I did a little session about Wonderlinks, because basically it's just a chance to share cool stuff that relates in maybe directly or sometimes tangentially to what we're talking about. My computer applications or media literacy class is rather wide ranging. So I have color coded them this year. So the media literacy links are red, the web design links are orange, the computer programming or coding ones are purple, and then some of them are for everyone, which are in blue. But it's just really fun, and I have my kids actually create them themselves on their web pages, because I teach them how to create, you know, basic Google sites in the computer applications class, and then obviously in web design we go into a lot more depth. But it's just the web, and just hyperlinking is so powerful, and being able to teach students the power of that, and then also being inspired by each other. There's just so, yes, there's bad stuff on the web. Of course there is, but there's incredible content, and, you know, with different influencers and the different worlds in which we live and inhabit, especially as younger people and older people or middle-aged people or whatever you want to call Jason and I, it really is fun. So,
well, I do turn 50 on Monday.
You're joining the club.
Yes. And so I don't know what that means. I will say, though, that I did trim my beard this morning, but yesterday I was in a meeting, and the lighting was as such in the room that in my webcam, it looked like I had just a pure white beard. So I am graying quickly. Although I will say that, for the record, the best gift of turning 50 is turning 50. Like, I am so excited for the decade ahead. And
as a kidney transplant survivor, you have a very good perspective on life.
Yeah. And I have to say, like, I wouldn't trade the wisdom or experiences I have of a 50-year-old for just about anything. So.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. All right. Well, hey, we've got another live viewer that's joined us. We're just having a party tonight. Do you want to take us somewhere else? You want me to go ahead and do a Ukraine-Israel one?
Why don't you go into the Ukraine links, and then maybe we can then pivot back.
Let's go. Yeah, we'll have to go. News. Okay. Well, you know, we talk a lot about media literacy and big tech and the weaponization of social media platforms and all kinds of things. Well, of course, now that there's a full-on war going on in Israel and Gaza, you shouldn't be surprised about this headline. So this is from Wired Magazine. The headline is that activist hackers are racing into the Israel-Hamas war for both sides. And what the article describes is the fact that even for very, very experienced fact checkers today, it is super hard to determine what is an actual new video or photograph. Things from Syria, from Chechnya, from all kinds of different conflicts are being shared. And so the need to have a web literacy framework like SIFT to talk to students about, you know, how do you ascertain who to trust, lateral reading, all of those kinds of things are really, really important. And then I know we didn't talk about this one because we missed last week. This article blows my mind, and it's actually, this is happening right now. The face of warfare is being changed by drones, and these particular ones are not AI driven. But this is a Washington Post article, and this is a gift link. The headline is from October 4th. The headline is, "In Ukraine, explosive DIY drones give an intimate view of killing." And what is taking place now in Ukraine, and again, this is also drones I was reading are definitely part of the landscape right now in Gaza and Israel, is rather than, you know, thousands of dollars, expensive, you know, drones, this is a makerspace war. And so for about $400, the Ukrainians are getting their geeky soldiers to strap on an RPG, a rocket-propelled grenade, onto a Chinese-made fly-by-wire drone, having the VR headset on their heads, and then able to fly these things up to, I think, 9 miles away, directly into the trench, directly into the truck, directly into the tank. You know, they're killing, you know, not only people, but destroying tanks worth millions and millions of dollars with these $400 devices. And so this is an absolute game changer. I think I talked and mentioned, and I have it in the Wonderlings. We've had it in our show notes from a few weeks ago, a New York Times article talking about the United States Air Force and the new strategy that formerly the U.S. Air Force is having with respect to China and Taiwan and their plans to use, in that case, AI-powered drone aircraft that are going to fly along with humans. But it's troubling that the video, you know, doesn't show anyone dying, because when the explosive, you know, blows up, the camera obviously goes offline, but it really is surreal. And, you know, Jason and I are both old enough, having been built, you know, I guess born in the early 70s. You know, we don't remember anything about the Vietnam War. And this is rather surreal. I would also say that it's very, very heavy, you know, just, we're all in different situations. It's probably, you know, likely that if we don't personally know of folks that are Jewish or have connections to Israel, there are people that we work with in our school, in our communities. And so I was talking to a teacher today about a student who had broken down yesterday, just with everything that's happening with Israel and just how serious. I mean, 300,000 people have been called up. So technology is definitely affecting all this. The velocity of the information is, and I guess I would just kind of end with a caution that we all need to be careful how much we are immersing ourselves into the news and into these kinds of things. And we're not going to spend all of our time tonight talking about that, but I think there's different elements of this that are important. And it's just a real eye-opener to see, of course, the ongoing conflicts that are occurring, but also the roles the technology, in this case specifically drones, are playing.
Yeah, and the pictures in this article are absolutely extraordinary. And And you labeled this exactly right, Wes. The idea of kind of maker war here, I think, is a good way to look at this. But, you know, there is an awful lot of pretty extraordinarily powerful stuff that you can buy off the shelf that sure can be used for, you know, lots of good, but could easily turn into a weapon of some significant impact. And, you know, obviously, you know, it's not the focus of the bigger thing, right? But at the same time, this is really both of these conflicts, I think, will be very much modern conflicts in a way perhaps we haven't seen to this point.
On a positive note, shout out to my dad, who's just chimed in the chat. He is back in Kansas, and I bet it's a little cold there.
Hi, Mr. Fryer, is like the guy called that. Hi, Mr. Fryer.
And he said they've actually hit freezing. Have you guys hit freezing yet in Missoula?
We've not, although I would imagine it'll happen in the next 2 weeks.
All right. So Manhattan, Kansas has got a little temperature going on Missoula. So, but I'm sure you'll make up for that cold winter weather very soon. So, all right. Well, how about some other news besides war and military stuff?
Sure. Let's spend a couple minutes in Google stuff, because there's a lot of interesting things going on there. Dr. Fryer, I think you probably bemoaned this when you read this as well. But do you want to talk about the imminent demise of Jamboard?
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, we talk about sometimes with sadness, Google Reader and other things. Google Workspace updates on September 28th had a headline, which was a little bit less I guess direct than I would have done. The headline is "Next Phase of Digital Whiteboarding for Google Workspace." But what this actually was is we're killing Jamboard. And so if you're not aware, Jamboard is a whiteboarding tool that has been available for a number of years right within Google Drive. It's similar to a slideshow, but you can, you know, draw on it. And it actually on the iPad had some really cool features as far as auto draw. I don't know if you ever played with that. But, you know, it's one of these things that I guess is not at the scale that Google needs. And so they've decided to basically sunset it, I think, at the end of October. But the other link I put in there is from Tom Milani, who I'm not familiar with. But he had an excellent article also on September 28th called "The Teacher's Guide for Transitioning from Jamboard to FigJam." And FigJam is, basically a clone, but it has some more features. I have not played with it yet. Eric Kurtz, who is absolutely an incredible educator and especially Google savvy dude, he writes the blog Control All Achieve. He has been doing a series of webinars, and you can view any of those online as well. I'll drop that link in. This is about FigJam and how you can move to it. So I'm going to guess you're not as much lamenting the loss of Jamboard, but did you use it, Jason?
Oh, no, I love Jamboard. And I don't use it with students because I don't see students all that often, but we used it as an internal tool. And we would do SWOT analysis exercises on Jamboard. We would do brainstorming exercises. My colleague Mike and I had a big picture to-do Jamboard where we'd stick information on there. And one of our favorite exercises is that we had a virtual team retreat. I think it was in December. We met for about 6 hours that day. And, you know, 6 hours is a long time to be in an online retreat. But we put up a page for each person and had people jump in and say nice things about their colleagues anonymously. So it was kind of a shout out board it was wonderful. And people still go back and look at that because people said such nice and wonderful things. So really interesting stuff and a really interesting tool. And of course, there was physical Jamboards you could buy from Google at one point as well. And, I see Betsy Springer. Hi, Betsy. Good to see you here. Is in the chat. She says Canva has whiteboard tools. Correct. That's a good alternative. The FigJam is an interesting one. And then there's another one that Google was pushing people towards. The only thing that just disappoints me here is that it was simple and free. And I know that there's a lot of other free options here too, but just to have it inside of our Google domains, we didn't have to set anything up external for that.
No third party questions or anything. Yeah, it's just right inside.
It's super fun. I've used it for webinars before, for kind of interactivity component. Yeah, I was pretty disappointed in this. And you know, I imagine, and I've not read to see if there's been any, or I have not read that there's been any explanation for this, but one would assume that they just weren't getting the usage out of it that they had hoped or anticipated. But yeah, a very sad day, I think.
And they haven't updated it in quite a while. So, yeah. You know, that's kind of a sign too. I dropped the link in to Eric Kurt's post from today, October 11th, called Fig Jam for Schools Advanced Webinar. But he's done a series of different webinars, and those are just fantastic. And I just, every once in a while, you know, over lunch or whatever, he's got the link to his intro webinar as well. It's just great professional development to pick up. So if you get to see him in person, I have gone to some conferences with the specific purpose of being able to see Mr. Kurtz in action, because he is really a force to be reckoned with, doing like, you know, six different sessions. And it's just like, he's the best presenter I've ever seen on Google Tools for Education. And Dr. Neifer is amazing,
I'm rookie level compared to Eric.
When it comes to just the depth and breadth of what he covers, it's just phenomenal. Yeah. So I'm going to try.
I'm an A-lister. I'm a C-pluser.
You are A, sir. You get an A from me. What else is happening in Google world?
Well, two pieces here. There's been a lot of movement in the last 2 weeks on Google hardware, and I think there's some interesting stuff here. The first one is that they've announced the Pixel 8 phone, and that is the Google's latest in their, you know, privately made phone that uses the Android operating system, of which is, you know, available via open source, Google will license out the advanced versions of it so you can use the so-called Plate Store. But that's interesting. I'm not a Google phone user. I mean, I do have an older Pixel that I keep in my bag that I actually use for fun and projects, and also to keep up with the Android operating system because I'm a nerd. And there is a there's an interesting commitment that comes with this year's Pixel 8 that they will give you 7 years of software updates. So it will be kept secure for 7 years. And then this particular article goes on to know, this is from Chrome Unboxed, that they've also made the commitment that they will keep parts available for the Pixel 8 phone for 7 years as well. And I think this is not only a really smart market play for them, because this is part of what they struggle with against Apple, that Android phones just don't get updates like Apple phones do. And I realize that a lot of that is the third-party manufacturers doing these phones, you know, whether you're talking about Samsung or let's see, LG isn't making phones anymore, other Android phones, Motorola makes great Android phones, actually, that are lower cost, but oftentimes they are lucky to get one update to the next version of Android, next big version of Android, and rarely get security updates past 2 or 3 years after the phone is released. And this commitment, I think, understands that there's certainly exceptions. Dr. Fryer and I are exceptions to this. We update relatively regularly in comparison to the average user, but being able to do this, or to have this available, I think is really great news for the environment, and also acknowledges that most regular users are keeping their phones for 4, 5, 6 years. And you know, that means they're going to get security updates. And so I just think this is an extraordinarily good move, and cheers for Google, excuse me.
And okay, for the record, you were a Google fanboy with both phone and watch for a number of years.
Yeah. And I've got a Pixel 5a that I bought for a song used a little while ago. And it also got the Android 14 upgrade last week. In fact, I upgraded right before I got on an airplane on the way home last week. I was able to play with it on the airplane. And it's there's a reason why I'm back in Apple land, but especially Google's phone Android is really, really well done. As a tablet OS, it's not super great, but I do like it very much as a phone OS. But yeah, good stuff.
And Thomas says he... Ooh. I didn't go on do not disturb mode. My daughter was trying to FaceTime me. Thomas is going to receive his Pixel 8 tomorrow. So,
yes. And congratulations, sir. I'm super jealous, actually, because that phone looks awesome. And then I also want to highlight a couple of articles here that I think this is great news. I'm a little annoyed for a reason I'll talk about in a second. These are both Chrome Unboxed articles, but Google has announced something they're calling Chromebook Plus. And Chromebook Plus is a program where they are working with major manufacturers of Chromebooks to offer Chromebooks that have a certain hardware level. And in exchange for that, the software available for those Chromebooks will be increased significantly in its functionality. And the basics are you need to have an i3 12th generation chip or better, or a Ryzen 3 7000 series chip or better, 8 gigs of RAM or more, 128 gigabytes of storage or more. The webcam must be at least 1080p, and it has to have temporal noise reduction, and then it needs to be a 1080p or better screen. And in exchange for that, you get all sorts of pretty sweet tools. It's things like AI-based... Excuse me, I got the hiccups. AI-based video video call adaptation, so it takes out background noise, improves the lighting, and also gives you a blur option that's baked into the OS instead of the software, which is a pretty extraordinary thing. And I'm going to take a quick sip here, Dr. Fryer.
New standards for Chrome OS apps.
Yeah, so they will be able to deliver on better web-based apps, so PWAs, in other words. And, for example, Adobe Photoshop on the web, which is apparently nearly function for function on what the desktop is able to do, but it slows down pretty dramatically with modest hardware on the web. You get 3 months of that for free with a Chromebook Plus purchase. And, you know, these Chromebook Pluses are intended to be devices that have better specs, but they're also going to bake AI tools directly into the operating system. So everything from writing assistants to custom wallpapers to AI-generated backgrounds for video calls, and literally will add, you know, AI tool functions anywhere where you can put your cursor. So it's not limited to Google Docs anymore. It could be the notes section of, you know, your bank app, and it's able to then put generative AI pieces in here. The reason why I'm annoyed is because, despite the fact that I have an impressive collection of Chromebooks, none of my Chromebooks qualify for this. About a dozen or so existing Chromebooks do, but even my best Chromebook is one generation behind where this goes. And so I'm going to have a little soul searching in the next 6 months or so to see if, and probably the answer to me will be to maybe sell off some of my mid-range ones used and then fund a thing here. But I'm really excited about this. And if for no other reason, then I feel like this kind of endorses where I've landed on Chromebooks. That, I mean, certainly modest Chromebooks have a place in the world, and for a lot of learning that happens inside of a classroom, I know people can get frustrated by low-end Chromebooks, but it does a pretty good job with Google Docs. It does a pretty good job with Google Sheets. It does a pretty good job with Google Slides. But if you are a power user or you're a creator, having the i3 or better chip, having the 8 gigabytes of RAM or better, having the 128 gigabyte hard drive or better, and the high resolution screen takes the Chromebook experience and makes it just that much better. And although I'm currently an Apple guy, I still carry around a Chromebook pretty frequently. And in fact, there have been trips I've taken recently where I could go all Google ecosystem like I typically go all Apple ecosystem and be able to do everything I would need to do without compromises. And that's the bottom line. Now, that said, it does put in an extra piece of complication into the kind of difference between the, you know, typical mass-produced classroom Chromebook piece. But for me, I typically don't buy super cheap Chromebooks. I'm seeing if I have my I did buy one for $70 a couple years ago that I actually like a lot, because it was cheap and it's also ultra portable. But that whole notion annoys me just a little bit. But great news for Google. Love the process here. Love the extra features they're adding in, and AI built in is just that much more sweet.
That article also has a link to a very, very excited article about Photoshop on the web.
Yes.
And we've, of course, talked about this a lot on the show as well, how the web continues to mature and web apps and the ability to just, you know, basically do anything you need to do through the web with some exceptions. I mean, we're not talking all the high end video production and other things that require specialized software. But I think it's great. You know, we look at the number of schools that have invested in Chromebooks. Of course, we need those to be refreshed, not to be, left to languish and, you know, be upgraded after too many years. But it's wonderful to see these affordances and I need to play Canva again, Jason. I'm just loving that, using that just about every day. And with my kids, it's just phenomenal. But the article also mentions, you know, Adobe Express, you get some like 3 months free, I think, with Adobe Express and Adobe Photoshop on the web. So anyway, Adobe's partnership with Google, I think, is positive. I'm a big Adobe fan. Have you played with Firefly yet by Adobe? 'Cause that's their generative.
Just a tiny bit. Okay. And I know it's, and I've also used the beta desktop Photoshop with its generative AI functions, just the tiniest of bits. Okay. And the advantage of having Adobe do that stuff, of course, is, they were founded, they are developed by, they are sold by people that are in creation industries. And, I am enjoying very much watching those tool sets develop.
Yep.
And then a quick note from Thomas in chat. I feel your pain, brother. In fact, we've got a couple of those Skin 713s, at work actually as part of our, internal collection there. And yeah, and that's a fabulous Chromebook too. So, I'm sure that there will be some soon that, you know, the best thing about Chromebooks is people undervalue them. So at some point in the relatively near future, I'm sure there will be a release, and then there will be a 50% off thing at Best Buy, and then I'll jump in. So.
All right.
Okay, Dr. Fryer, where to next, sir?
Let's see. Why don't we head up to a couple AI articles? Did we talk about the Stephen Fry article last time about the Harry Potter audiobooks?
No.
Does that ring a bell? Okay. This is quite an article. So this is Fortune, middle of September, on September 15th. The headline is, actor Stephen Fry says his voice was stolen from the Harry Potter audiobooks and replicated by AI, and warns that this is just the beginning. Now, Stephen Fry is not the only person that needs to be concerned, because I think I heard this on a Twit This Week in Tech podcast a couple weeks ago, and I apologize. I try not to do this, but that Fortune article actually is a paywall article. So anyway, if you put in Stephen Fry Harry Potter audiobooks into Google News, we can get another one. Not to say that we don't want to read Fortune and pay for it, but what I heard is that they only need about 11 seconds of your voice in order to create an AI version that is fairly reasonable. And so certainly now this is episode 307, there are plenty of, look at that. There are plenty of audio examples of Jason and my voice. Here's the crazy thing. This isn't in the show notes. Related to this with AI and the ability to synthesize someone's voice with only a small sample. And I don't think that part, the Hollywood writer's strike has been resolved, but not the actor's strike. Is that correct? Have you followed that?
That's
I think
true.
I haven't been tracking that religiously every day, but I think that's where that is. The danger of social engineering with the voices of people you know is not a pie in the sky or just like, you know, that's a possibility. It literally just happened to our neighbors who are in their mid-80s, actually to one of their sons. And he received a phone call that was supposedly from his son. And he called him a name that was not the name for him. And so he identified it. But anyway, the relative that got this phone call is a retired police officer and anyway, called the family, but it was crazy because I mentioned something about this and they said, well, do you know what? That just happened to us. So, we need to be aware that this is happening. Again, there's going to be positives to this, right? I've thought, oh, wow. You know, if I'd want to make an audio book or audio version of one of my, you know, past or future books or something like that, I could, you know, you train one of these tools and not necessarily read the whole thing. Although I think it's probably great to read it yourself. Also be aware of the fact that this can happen and this, just like we have examples of phishing with a PH where someone's trying to get your credentials, spear phishing is when they're specifically targeting you, like at my previous school, our head of school would sign his emails just this certain way. And so we had people who knew that and emailed our teachers to try and trick them and it I could tell more, but to send iTunes gift cards, it sounds kind of ridiculous, but this works. There are people who will do these things and rather than pick up the phone and say, hey, is so-and-so really okay? Do they need me to send them a couple $100 in iTunes gift cards? People actually do send them. So be aware of the fact that these kinds of schemes now include voicemail messages and live phone calls, which could sound like your loved one and could be somebody who's just trying to, you know, get some money or a credential or access to your device or something like that. So it's sort of next level malware with AI powered voice, I guess, you know, copying or replication. Yeah. And thank you for the archive.ph link, which is honestly a fantastic tool to be aware of. It's archive.today. Sometimes that one doesn't work and sometimes it's been up and down. But this is archive.ph. And so if you need to provide a link to somebody, that's a paywall free version.
And regular listeners to the podcast, may remember this, hint we gave earlier this year, but something I've done with my family is to set what is effectively a safe word, with them. So, if both Dr. Fryer and I would be at risk of this. You know, there are 307 episodes of this podcast that are freely available on YouTube. Dr. Fryer also has a vast archive of past presentations. He podcasts elsewhere in channels. And that, you know, it doesn't take that much audio anymore with the tools that are available to create something that would probably be good in a pinch, but, you know, it would be very easy, to create our voices in an AI model. And I have elderly parents, right? And, you know, my mom's pretty nifty at sniffing out scams. It's one of her superpowers in the world. But, the bottom line is that the right people with the right story, with the right setup, I think could easily fool, even the most savvy of folks for this. And so we've set up a word. That if I'm ever calling in a desperate situation and ask them to do something weird, I need to be using that word. And if I don't use that word, then they are to ignore it and then try to contact me directly. And I think that's good advice for everyone. And I don't care, you know, how old your kids, your siblings, or your parents are. I think it's a good idea to make sure that people know that that's the case.
Absolutely. I put this one under tech correction, big tech, and I thought I had some additional reflections. I probably have them in here. I don't know if you follow Tech Policy Press, but this is their October 8th episode. It's called Digital Empires, A Conversation with Anu Bradford. Anu Bradford has a new book out called Digital Empires, The Global Battle to Regulate Technology. The book describes the geopolitical competition to establish digital governance models between the US, EU, and China. One of the things that I thought was very prescient or on point with this is sometimes this idea of an AI battle between big tech and companies is sort of like you're either going to have the US model or the China model. You know, pick which one you're going to have, world. But she points out there's also the EU model, and the EU model has a lot of the same you know, conceptions of rights and rule of law as we have here in the United States, but there is a greater level of regulation and there's privacy rights. And so I can't commend this enough. This was published on Sunday, October 8th. And I would say it is probably the best podcast I've heard about all of the sort of issues around tech regulation, not only in the United States, but also globally. So that is an outstanding podcast conversation. And I had not heard of that book before, so I've added that to a book to read list.
Excellent. Let's talk about a couple other social media stories, or I should say tech correction social media, big tech stories. This is from the Wall Street Journal on October 3rd, and you'll notice, Dr. Farrar, that's also an archive link. But the Wall Street Journal reported, as it was widely reported, that Meta plans to charge $14 a month for ad-free Instagram or Facebook. And I'm just laughing because I'm 99% sure that at some point earlier on in our podcast, I said something like, you know, every time you get the rumor about Facebook charging, just remember they get a lot more out of you than $5 a month in advertising dollars. And I think this is a sign that advertising is just not a sustainable model, even for big tech. And the bottom line is that, you know, I think people are moving away from a lot of these social media tools for reasons other than advertising and money. But I also think it's a complicated world right now from the standpoint of, that if we're going to diminish advertising's impact on these tools, the only way to really do that is to find another income source. And the best way to do that, I think, is to just charge money per month. Now, I think of it in terms of more microtransactions. Like, for example, I think, you know, New York Times could do really well, if instead of, you know, pushing their, you know, subscription model, although I am a subscriber to the New York Times and find $10 value with that every month, you know, there are times when I've gone to, you know, the so-and-so Tribune in so-and-so Arkansas and wanted to read that article. And there was a method set up to where I could give 25 cents for access to that article with one button click. I would do that. And I think I still think that could be a brilliant way to start funding journalism again, that instead of trying to mess with, you know, paywalls and you know, 5 free articles and then not, I just think a simple system with one click, you know, that's hooked to a credit card, maybe even you limit it to $10 every month so that you have to, you know, fund it more once you get to the end of your $10 of single clicks. You know, that could be a real powerful piece. But I guess the question I have for you, Dr. Fryer, you're on Facebook, you're on Instagram. In fact, we're buddies on both of those platforms, and it's a great way for me to see what's going on in the lovely Fryer family. And I'm sure the part of the lure of my feeds is that I post funny things and travel things. But would you be in for $14 a month for either of these tools?
Well, fortunately or unfortunately, since we don't live in Europe, I don't think we're going to face that, because it sounds like it's because of Europe's regulation that they are actually going to push this. So in Europe, if you don't agree to personalize ads, you're going to fork out the cash. But if you're still up for personalized ads, they're going to just monetize your account. I don't know. I mean, there's like 7 different social media platforms now that I share on. It is a bit ridiculous, and I don't know how sustainable it is over the long term. But I would put Facebook right up at the top, just because so many, you know, personal, you know, friends, family, there are other folks that I'm connected with. And I've actually, in the last month, I guess, started to share more into the Speed of Creativity page that I've made. Mm-hmm. I think I might have said it on the show before. Early on, my wife threatened to unfollow me on Facebook if I didn't quit sharing so much crap. Because I would like cross-post everywhere. Hey, I'm reading this article. Don't I want to tell everyone about that? And she's like, this is ridiculous. You're filling up my feed. And I was like, oh, okay. And so I stopped doing that. I know. But I don't know. So anyway, now I have my Speed of Creativity page. When I'm reading an article or something like that, I'm sharing it over there. But I really do value Facebook a lot. I think the algorithm certainly has had some bad, you know, it's done bad things, and people have done bad things with it, no doubt. But on a personal level, you know, I feel more connected to our extended family, our immediate family, our children, you know, you friend, you know, just all kinds of people. It's just amazing. It's fantastic. So I would probably think about paying for it if I had to, but given the choice, what'll be interesting is what will Europeans individually do, right? Because if this is the deal that ends up being brokered, it's a little bit like the antitrust lawsuit right now that's going on. We don't have anything about that this week about, you know, Apple and Amazon. There's some really big Department of Justice lawsuits going against these companies. Finally, this is part of the tech correction. And one of the things that I think Europe found is that even when they were forcing, companies to make, to not have Google be the default search engine, but to make users choose it, over 90% of the people were choosing Google, you know, because Google's the best. It is freaking awesome. And so it'll just be interesting to see. There's a lot of hand-wringing and complaints, but if Europe gets this choice and okay, Europe, you know, would you like to pay $14 or would you like to have personalized ads? Or do you want to stop using Facebook? You know, I want to see that study. I'm going to predict that a lot of people are going to say, you know, those personalized ads won't be that big of a deal, because I don't think there is an immediate cost that people see to that. And that's one of the things about the attention economy and surveillance capitalism and all this stuff, is that there are harms, but they're not necessarily things that we directly see or that we, you know, feel in the same way that we perceive other kinds of harms.
You know, but to be honest, though, like, if that were the choice for every tool, I would love that power, right? I mean, and you know, I almost certainly it's been a personally a mixed bag about whether advertising based and personal data track based sites have been a net positive or net negative for me. It's so hard to tell because it's so complicated here. You know, decades after this has become a thing, right? But I do think that there is something to the fact that that there's interesting stuff that we could do to counter that if you're willing to put a little bit of money in. And, you know, I probably subscribe to too many services right now, just in general, and it doesn't help that there is a large amount of AI tools on my bills right now. But I do think that would be an interesting direction for all of this to go into.
Absolutely. All right. What else? We've got almost 10 minutes left.
Okay. Yeah. I there's a fun announcement. A couple weeks back, the Raspberry Pi was announced. Raspberry Pi 5 was announced. And what was super interesting to me about that is that a new Raspberry Pi has been hard to come by the last couple of years. There was a supply chain issues. It was hard to get any of these for a while. And in fact, I've seen a number of interesting YouTube videos about how a lot of makers have moved towards small form factor Intel based PCs. And in fact, I love small form factor based PCs. In fact, I'm looking for on my workbench right now, where is my little HP box? Well, I'm building an arcade machine that I'm going to hook up to my TV. And
with a Raspberry Pi?
No, it's with an HP small form factor box. And then when I'm done, I'll probably just build a Raspberry Pi one too, because I'm a nerd. But the it's a really cool really cool update that itself is I think a pretty powerful machine now. The Raspberry Pi advanced version will have 8 gigs of RAM. And you can buy it, at the end of October, and, it's got a lot of ports on it. There's two, 4K, HDMI ports. There is a micro SD slot, as there always has been, two USB 3.0 ports, two USB 2.0 ports, a gigabit Ethernet, port, and then USB-C based power. There's also Bluetooth 5, so the latest standard there. But at the point of which, you know, you can really build an extraordinary number of things with these, and I'm guessing that a lot of the makerspaces and schools that have done work in this with these devices will probably be stocking up on these. But I'll be I have not seen, or I've not dug enough to do a pre-order on this yet. So I will probably do that soon. But this might be a birthday present to myself, because I think Raspberry Pis are amazing.
So because that article is on The Verge, I happen to see in the sidebar the number one trending article. And as both Google Home users, the headline from yesterday, Google's already bringing back the software features it removed because of the Sonos' lawsuit. I guess they won the lawsuit on Friday, and so they had had to do some changes to Nest speakers with, like, grouping and some of the playback, although I think I've still been able to do that on mine. I don't know what that is. But anyway, interesting that they won the lawsuit and those features are coming back. Cool. A little IoT personal tech headline there. What else, sir?
Let's see here. Oh, let's do the end of the era article. Netflix has announced that they will no longer have a mail DVD service. And this is something that's been back to its beginning. I've been a Netflix subscriber for a very long time. And it's they're now depreciating that particular service. The reason why I wanted to mention this, however, is twofold. The first one was that it was a little problematic. I had the 3-disc-at-a-time subscription, which was the standard subscription, and I loved it, except that there's always a problem that I call the Sophie's Choice problem, because for a year and a half, we had the DVD of Sophie's Choice. Both my wife and I had seen it before. We hadn't watched it together, however, and it's an extraordinary movie in so many ways, not the least of which is Meryl Streep's performance in that film. But you're never really in the mood to watch Sophie's Choice, right? Like, it's a real experience. And so, you know, the second and third disc in our group would just come and go frequently. And I'm not joking when I say that DVD sat in our house for 18 months because we never found a time where it was, you know, obviously the time to watch Sophie's Choice. And so when they did move to a streaming model, at first it was a free add-on to the disc process, and then became its own product. We got rid of the DVDs almost immediately after that. But the other thing too is that I've always been a big fan of Netflix from the beginning, and they're kind of the, you know, old elephant now in the space, and people criticize them for this and that, and probably some of that criticism is something I would agree with. But what I would say is that I did look into this a year or two back, but I had very seriously considered investing in Netflix. I was going to invest $1,000 in it in like 2003. And if I had done that, I would be very wealthy right now. So sadly, that was, and I only looked up that number once, and my heart sank.
But you've made it back in Dogecoin, right?
I have a decent amount of Dogecoin. That remains true. But I will tell you and I've also picked some real losers in tech history too. So,
all right. Here's a fun one. I don't know if you listen to this podcast. The Story Collider is a science story podcast. And so their episode from September 8th was called Food Science: Stories About Things We Eat. And it features a wonderful interview with the Corn Queen. Katie Murphy, known as the Corn Queen, is a plant biologist who loves studying the inner workings of corn. She is the director of phenotyping and principal investigator of the Donald Danforth Plant Science Center, a nonprofit research institute in St. Louis. Basically, she is a TikTok influencer. And as part of one of the grants that they had, they needed to have a social media outreach, and she found that she loved that. And so it is just the most wonderful TikTok channel you'll ever see. And I think, you know, something worth, you know, sharing with older, you know, middle school or high school students. And also I think speaks to the importance of being able to communicate in plain language about the things that we're doing, actually advocating for science and the support of science is really important. It's kind of like right up there with representative democracy, I think, and helping people understand what scientists do and, you know, not just relegating their work to you know, journals that are behind paywalls that few people get to read or see. Anyway, it was awesome. So I put that under the social media category.
Well, Dr. Fryer, I think we're near the top of the hour here. Is there anything else we want to get in before we head to our Geeks of the Week?
Yeah, let's just do one more. This is an AP under tech correction. The Supreme Court will decide if state laws limiting social media platforms violate the Constitution. And I know there is at least one member of our team here that is in a state where have had some laws passed about TikTok and some other platforms. And so I think this is basically a federalism case. And so Republican-dominated legislatures have signed into law these bills that aim to prevent social media companies. This is from censoring users based on their viewpoints. And so anyway, that could have some far-reaching implications for other kinds of laws, because it's very interesting, right? Interstate commerce is supposed to be regulated by the federal government, I think, per the Constitution. And so the internet's kind of this thing that goes across state lines. And so it's weird to have like, TikTok is banned here and the requirement is going to be different in California based on this privacy law or whatever. So that'll be one to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I'm in a state that has outlawed TikTok as of January 1st, 2024. It is in the courts right now. And so who knows where that goes. But yeah, there's a lot of interesting questions of the Constitution to come.
Absolutely. All right. Shall we Geek of the Week it?
Yeah. Let me go ahead and start. I have an easy and quick one. It's just an AI tool, but I was amused by it. It's called LibrarianAI.com, and it does what a lot of recommendation engines already do, but it's a nice simple interface, and I think it's a good example of let's not get too charmed by the generative AI. The AI can do a lot of cool things for this, but essentially you enter in 1, 2, or 3 book titles. It gives you recommendations for more that it thinks you might like. And so I've done this a couple times in the last couple weeks with nonfiction books. In fact, the two books that I read while traveling last week were recommendations of Librarian-AI. I think this also would be a cool tool to use with kids.
Yeah, absolutely. I will say that we've been playing in my web design class with the Bing search tool. My kids figured out if you use Edge, it gives you more points and basically credit to not be logged in. So it's incentivizing the use of Edge, but it is more limited. And we were trying to make a tic-tac-toe game today, and we weren't able to do it in Bing. And then when I was in ChatGPT-4 later myself, logged in, was able to make it. It works great. So anyway, we're playing with it, but it's, I think I want to keep, please keep sharing these tools, you know, Claude AI that you shared by Anthropic a few weeks ago or a month ago or whatever has just changed my life. So
yeah, me too.
Okay. Two quick ones for me. Number one, did a podcast interview with one of my seventh graders who moderates live streams with hundreds of live viewers for a Los Angeles based company called Cool Kicks. And so it's just a 13-minute interview, but it's an interview that we did. He's going by the name of G for the podcast interview, but it's just amazing. And the literacy skills that he's gaining and just, I don't know, like, okay, wow, you are, you know, and he sometimes, I think he's getting some, he may be getting some swag. And he certainly has gotten some good treatment when he's actually visited the store in person, but just kind of amazing. What are our kids doing these days? Oh, they're moderating live streams with, you know, companies in California. And then this one is absolutely so exciting to me. Mastodon is one of the, you know, 7 different social media platforms that I'm using these days, but I've used Flipboard forever, and Mastodon now supports lists. What does this mean? Well, I have a Yoda's list like I do in Twitter, and Twitter doesn't work this way anymore, right? Elon broke the API or, you know, made it break so that you cannot follow a list that you maintain in Twitter, which I just love to do this inside the app and website Flipboard. I didn't see this publicized anywhere. I just happened to go in and check my accounts and I was like, oh, I wonder if I can do this. Oh my gosh, you can. So you can create, you know, any of the lists that you've created in Mastodon, similar to what we do in Twitter. you can follow those directly as a little panel, just like a magazine, and then you can follow those. Mastodon, to my knowledge, does not allow us to publicly share the lists like you can with Twitter, and so other people can't subscribe to them. So hopefully that's something that the Mastodon developers will do. But this is really, really excellent, and I have loved using my lists in Twitter. I still use them, actually. I just can't use them in Flipboard anymore. But it was a discovery this week, and that made me very happy.
That's awesome. And yeah, and I know you've talked about that in the past, and I also know how much Flipboard is a part of your media consumption tool set. So thank you, Dr. Fryer. Hey, where can people find you on the internets?
I am all over the place, but you can find those links at westfryer.com/after. And maybe I'll be using an AI curated Substack soon to kind of share, but I'm definitely still cooking at Cook with Wes. How about you?
Best place to find me still is X. I'm sorry, I can't use it. Twitter, where I'm a Tech Savvy Teach. And at some point, I feel like I need to double down on one of these other alternatives. We'll see how that goes. But hey, this isn't just Jason bemoaning Twitter. It is the Tech Situation Room, where once a week podcast on Wednesday nights at 8 in neither of our time zones, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 7 p.m. Mountain Time, somewhere in the middle of the night, UTC. Hey, we wish you could join us live. And each week we have an interesting group of folks that join our audience, an increasing number of folks that join our audience. But if you can't do that live, although we wish you would, go wherever find our podcasts are aggregated. We're in all your favorite podcast apps. You can also go to our website, edtechsr.com, and download TinyNV3, or you can see our archives on YouTube or Facebook. In the meantime, stay safe, stay savvy, and we will see you next time on the EdTech Situation Room. Good night, y'all.
Good night, everybody.